The whole topic falls on with Bayes at the beginning of the Gemara. We learned from the Mishnah that if a Kfai was cooked with the Gidanasha still inside, then we said if there is enough of it to be nice and tam to give a flavor into the meat, then we said the Kfai is Asr. We talked about, does it mean only the Kfai? Does it mean everything else that's in the pot? We talked about where the Gidanasha was cooked inside the Kfai. So now the Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, Lashon HaElashon is Bashaba. Now that would only apply if indeed it was cooked inside it. Aval Nitzlaba, then it's cooking is, so then you have the problem is you have the liquid, when you're cooking by definition, means that you have some kind of liquid involved. So either it's in a soup or it's in some other kind of thing like that where you have liquid that then can cause taste to get transferred from one place to another. Aval Nitzlaba, but if it was roasted, then the flavor of it doesn't spread so far. Then he can peel off the layer after layer of the thigh and eat it until he reaches the gid, and then that will be osir, and up until that point it was mutter. A number of points in that Tosfos and many other Rishonim point out. First of all, it doesn't necessarily mean literally until the gid, because if nothing, now you have, in, when it comes to Hilchos Tarugos, when it comes to cases where flavor is absorbed from one thing into another, so you have a number of different cases. We're going to turn to the next parak. For example, we're going to learn that sometimes you have, where there's no cooking, where there's no heat involved, then it's generally enough just to wash off one thing. Let's say, for example, if a cold piece of meat touches a cold piece of cheese, then all you have to do is rinse them off. Then you have cases where you need what's called kadei klipa. You need to take off a layer, a peel's thickness of it. The post can explain that a peel for that purpose means where it's strong enough to be able to come off as one. It's thick enough to come off as one intact piece. So there's no particular thickness. It'll depend on the consistency of the food or whatever it is that we're talking about. Then you have even more kadei netzila. Sometimes you have where you have to take off a thumb's thickness, an etzba's thickness of the substance. And then you have sometimes where it's completely osir. So now Tosfos and many other Rishonim point out in the sport and the postkin that you have, at the very least, you need kadei klipa. You need a peel's thickness around the gidanasha. It wouldn't just be enough to literally say you could eat all the way until the gidanasha. And maybe even Tosfos says you may even need kadei netzila, that thicker depth, an inch or so, or three quarters of an inch, depending how you measure the size of an etzba. Because after all, fine, whether you're not going to say the flavor got transferred throughout the entire thing because it was roasted rather than cooked. But nevertheless, you would still have to you can't literally eat all the way until the gidanasha. The Rashba disagrees and says that's a kadei klipa you would need, just not kadei netzila. It's not just kadei klipa, but it's a thin layer, and therefore Shmuel doesn't mention it. There is also Nevi Jabal points out that even if you say kadei netzila, fine. What it means is when it says ad shemagia legid, it means until you reach the area which is affected by the gid, which would be kadei netzila. Tosfos also brings up the point that what about if they were salted together? What about if the gidanasha was what about if the thigh was salted with the gidanasha inside it? So now the point is, now we have a concept in halacha called moliach harei kareseach, that when something is heavily salted, then it has the din. Then taste is absorbed from one place to another, just as if it was roasted. Tosfos points out though that that's true in our Mishnah though anyway. So in our Mishnah, what you actually have is first they were salted together, and then that made it osir, kadei klipa, kadei netzila, or whatever. And then on top of that, you have they were cooked together, and now you have the whole thing became osir, as opposed to Shmuel was talking about where it was just roasted. So then you don't have the whole thing. It's not going to be osir, but you are going to have to. But there is going to be a part that's also kadei netzila or kadei klipa, according to the different opinions. So that's how it is. So you have that distinction. Tosfos points out that sometimes the word bishul in Lashon Kodesh can also mean to roast, which is why Shmuel has to specify and say that there is in fact that difference. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so? For Amar Rav Huna, Gdish Tzloy B'chelboy, Rav Huna said that if you roasted a goat with its chelav, you didn't take out the chelav before you roasted it, also lechel after the Medrash Oznay, then you're not allowed to eat from any of it, even from the tip of its ear, where there's no chelav, because in other words, the chelav, the flavor of the chelav goes and spreads throughout the entire body of the animal. So klipa, natila, and anything is not going to be enough. You're going to have to the whole thing is going to be osur. So what's the difference between that and the gidan osur? And the answer is shani chaylev de mafateya. The answer is that chaylev is different because it spreads through, it permeates. So yes, chaylev being fat, it actually the flavor and the essence of it spreads out throughout all the meat, and therefore you have in this case where it's also. But the gidanosha itself is a nerve. It doesn't it may have a flavor, it may not. We've touched on before, and we're going to talk about later on whether the gidanosha is nois in tam or not. Yes, the gidan nois in tam or ain begidan nois in tam. But in any case, it's certainly not like fat that permeates and spreads out throughout everything. And as far as the fat around the gidanosha, the Rishonim point out that look, I mean that fat is also only dirabbanan, and therefore you're not going to say that everything should be also because of that. So therefore, you have reason to say that. And they have an addition also. Tosfos points out another point as well that Rabbi Natan points out that chelav is very, very fatty. So therefore, it can be mafapeya. So therefore, even roasting allows it to permeate throughout all the meat, as opposed to the fat around the gid. Yes, it's fat, but it's not so much. And therefore, it doesn't have that penetrating power. So far we have that distinction between whether you have chelav or the gid anosha with its fat, whether one's also daraisa or the other dirabanan, one is a lot of fat, one is a little bit. This idea of chelav d'mefapeya, by the way, it comes up in other areas of halacha as well, that it's not chelav as well as, in general, shemen, anything oily, anything greasy, has that power of mefapeya b'chuloi, that it permeates and spreads throughout the whole thing. There's many places in Chassidus where it talks about that Chassidus is compared to Pinius HaTorah. Chassidus is compared to oil in that regard. We know that the Torah is compared to many different liquids, compared to water and to wine and to oil and to milk and so forth. So the comparison to oil is one of the points of comparison is this mefapeya, that it has the ability to penetrate throughout, and the same way the study and the practice of Chassidus has the power to permeate through and transform a person's whole metzius and his whole attitude towards Yiddishkeit. So the Gemara asks, fine, well, chelav osur. So you're telling me the chelav then, if it was roasted together, it's all going to be osur. Well, Amar Rav Abba Chana, Udahaba Kameh de Rabbi Yochanan, B'knisht de Moin. There was a case that was brought before Rabbi Yochanan in the shul in the city of Moin. B'gdish et sloy b'chelvoy, about that, a goat was roasted with the chelav inside. They hadn't cleaned it out first. But also v'shalu al Rabbi Yochanan, so they came and asked Rabbi Yochanan. V'amar Rav, and he told them, kol l'foich lan shabagi l'chelvoy. All you have to do is peel off layer by layer until you reach the chelav, which is what, so now Shmuel had said that before about the gid anosha. But now we were just saying that chelav is in fapeya, that it penetrates throughout all of it, and yet Rabbi Yochanan is allowing us to just peel off layer by layer and not have a problem because of the chelav. And the Gemara gives a few answers. So answer number one, hahu kochosh shava. One answer is that in that case it was kochosh, it was thin. So therefore, the chelav does not have that power to penetrate throughout. Now, what does that mean, kochosh? Rashi says it can mean that the animal itself was kochosh, it was a scrawny animal. So yes, it has chelav, any animal has chelav in it, but nevertheless, the chelav of a scrawny animal like that is not going to have that power of a fapea. Or the second answer, Tosfos says, is that it has very little fat, and therefore it's botel b'shishin. And there's a lot of discussion among the poskim about the difference between these two opinions and when we would apply one and not the other, and you have there's lots of details in Hilchos Tarugus about how we understand according to these two answers. One interesting thing in that regard, a few days ago in Shlosha Prakim of Rambam, was the end of Hilchos Korban Pesach, and the Rambam describes over there, he says the Korban Pesach, being that it has to be roasted whole, he says you don't clean out the chelev, you don't clean out the giranoshe, you don't anything before you roast it. You roast it whole with all those things, and as you're eating it, you take out the parts you're not allowed to eat. The Ravid is very upset about that. He says, how is that possible? You're roasting it with the chalev and you're roasting it with the gidan nosha and all that. And then aren't you going to have the taste of it is going to penetrate other parts like we're saying over here in the Gemara. And the Ravid says that if I have the schus to have a korban pesach and I see that they prepare it the way that Rambam says it, I'll throw it on the ground. I wouldn't need such a thing. So, what would the Rambam answer to that? So one of them, the different Nosei Kalim and the Rambam deal with that point, and one point is, based on the Gemara over here, that there's a distinction between a scrawny animal and a fat one. The one for the Korban Pesach is not necessarily scrawny per se, but it's a yearling animal. It has to be a goat or a sheep within its first year, so therefore it doesn't really have a lot of chalev yet, so therefore there's not such a problem of the chalev. And like we're saying over here, you can eat layer after layer, and only when you get close to the chelev do you have to leave it alone. And the same thing with the giranosha. And as far as the fact of it, b'chlal, you have the fact of the giranosha, as we've talked about several times, is also only dirabanan, or really only because minag Yisrael. And maybe when it comes to the Korban Pesach, we actually would eat it. Well, Chavetz Chaim brings up that point that maybe we would actually override the usual minag and eat it. Or even if not, then fine. It means just that fat and a little layer around it, you wouldn't be able to eat. So it's still possible to explain, as the Rambam does, that you'll do that, you'll roast the thing whole, and then you'll remove those various parts as you're eating it. Anyway, so that's one answer. So Rabbi Yochanan, in Rabbi Yochanan's case, then the goat was kochosh, so it was a scrawny animal. So again, either its chelev does not have that penetrating power, or the chelev is less than 1/60th of it, and therefore, so therefore, the whole thing doesn't become osir. Whereas Rav Huna's din, where he said that if you roasted a goat with the chelev, you would not be allowed to eat any of it, even from the tip of the ear, he was talking about a normal animal which has a lot more fat. Okay. A second answer, Rav Huna by Yehuda Omar. Rav Huna by Yehuda says it wasn't a whole goat that was roasted with the chelev. It was a part of a goat. Kolya b'chelva haba. Specifically, it was a kidney was roasted with the chelev on it. Now, as we've learned before, the chelev that surrounds the kidneys, the fat that surrounds the kidneys, the renal capsule, is in fact chelev that's also daraisa. So now, in this case, the kidney had been roasted, and they hadn't taken off that chelev first. We also learned before a few daffin ago that there's chelev inside the kidney as well, which covers the ureters or whatever, and there's an explanation. From Avinu Yeruchim that's talking about that fat, which is also only dirabanan. Anyway, so Vishalya and Rabbi Yochanan allowed it. Now, why did he allow it? If we say we're talking about the fat on the outside of it, as most of the Rishonim learn, then what it would mean is that because the fat is separated from the actual kidney by a membrane. You have a membrane, a krum that separates between the kidney itself and the layer of fat surrounding it. So that prevents the whole kidney from being also. Now, Tosfos points out you would have to remove kidei klipa, that membrane itself is going to absorb the chelev, and therefore so that itself will be also, and therefore you're also going to have to remove from the actual kidney itself kidei klipa a peelable layer. And now Tosfos in this connection points out, what about indeed if they didn't remove the chelev on the outside, then they didn't remove that fat on the inside either? And then how is that? And then how is that working? And the answer is that's also only the rabbanon. Tosfos says so. Therefore, it's not going to ask for the whole thing. So on the other hand, again, Rabbi Yerucham says that what we're talking about is we're not talking about the fat on the outside at all. We're talking only the fat on the inside. And therefore, again, since that's also only the Rabbanon, and therefore it doesn't create such a problem. But according to him, if you roasted it with the fat on the outside, indeed the whole thing would be also. So that's the second answer. So therefore, so it was mutter. So when you have a regular a case of a whole goat roasted together with the fat, with the chalev, then you have a problem. Indeed, the fat spreads out throughout the whole thing. I'm going to say that would apply even by kochosh. But when it comes to the kidney specifically, because you have that membrane that separates between the chalev and the kidney itself, then therefore that saves it from being osur. An interesting shiloh that came up to the Moshe Feinstein at one point in that regard. We're going to learn in the next paragraph, we're going to talk about as far as the liver can't be kashered like ordinary meat because there's too much blood in it. Instead, you have to roast it. So what happens if you cook a liver, then it actually becomes osur. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva about one time somebody cooked a chicken, as in one time somebody fried a chicken, and he didn't realize that now you have, when or sometimes when you buy a whole chicken, sometimes they'll leave the giblets and other, the various internal organs, sometimes they'll leave them inside it, inside a plastic shrink wrap. So in this case, after they fried it, they realized that the liver was still inside there, inside the plastic. So what's the din? So Rav Moshe had said, he said the rest of the chicken is indeed mutter, because it's like this krum over here. You'd have to take off kedei klipa around where the liver was. Where he says maybe kedei netila in case there was a hole in the plastic or something. So we see, in other words, that a krum, that a membrane like that can prevent the isser from penetrating and making it osser. So far we have two answers. One, that the case brought to Rabbi Yochanan was indeed a whole goat, but it was a scrawny one. A second one, it wasn't a whole goat at all, but it was a kidney that was roasted together with its fat. And then a third answer, Ravin Barav Ada Omar. Ravin Barav Ada says it wasn't even a goat or kidney at all. Kilchis the ilpas hava. It was a kilchis, which is a type of non-kosher fish that was cooked in a pan or a pot together with pieces of meat that are mutter. But also Shailu a Rabbi Yochanan, so they came to Rabbi Yochanan, but Omalahu, and according to this version, what he told them is Lita Mekfila Arma, what you should have is have a Goyish chef taste it and see if he can detect a taste of the fish in it. So how do you have three different, completely different versions of what kind of shiloh was brought to Rabbi Yochanan? I mean, this sounds like almost machlokas and metzias. They can't figure out what the actual question was that was brought to Rabbi Yochanan. So the Ritva implies, and the idea seems to be, in other words, that the Amoraim are talking about that there are actually different, these are different cases. They all agree a case where the goat was brought to Rabbi Yochanan, but in addition, they're also mentioning other cases that were brought to him that are related to that, from which we can learn, dinim about this, about Hilchos Taharos. An interesting point when Rashi says that the fish was together with meat. Why didn't he say together with fish? So there's an interesting point. One of the Nosei Kelim on Shulchan Aruch called the Beis Meir says because if it was fish with fish, even though different fishes do in fact have different tastes, as far as halacha is concerned, you might consider that they all have the same taste, and therefore you can't really rely on a taste test. Therefore, Rashi necessarily has to say that we're talking about fish together with meat. In any case, the point is, so Rashi says you can rely on this Goyish chef Lafi Tumoy. So you can't specifically ask him, does this taste of fish, Rashi says, because then we can't necessarily trust him. But Rashi says you can just ask him. So you don't ask him, we need to know this because of Issa the Heter. Just ask him, you know, what do you think of the taste of this? And he'll be Messiah Lafi Tumoy. He'll just say, on his own, not knowing that it has implications in halacha, yes, this tastes of fish, or no, it doesn't. And then you can rely on that. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos gives a different explanation, which is you don't even have to be. It could be that you explicitly asked him specifically, you know, we're Jews, we keep kosher, we have this non-kosher fish was in here. Does it taste of it or not? So Tosfos explains that actually no. What you do is when you have a professional chef So you have a concept in halacha called a professional is not going to want to ruin his professional reputation by saying something that's not true. So therefore, so in this case, he'll tell the truth whether he actually tastes the fish in it or not. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings this din about the beginning of Hilchos Tavruos. It brings this din about having a kfila, about having a goyish chef taste it. We're going to talk about an Amud Beis later on. You have cases where even a yid can taste it, namely when you're talking about things that are not, let's say, for example, truma gets mixed with chulin. So they're both mutter to some kinds of Jews. The difference is that truma is mutter only to a koyim, so then you can have a koyim taste it and see if he detects the taste of the truma. But here you're talking about kosher and non-kosher mixed together, so therefore, so you can't ask a Jew to do it, you would have to have a goy do it. So at the beginning of Hilchos Tavruos, it brings this point about that you could ask a goyish chef. So first he says that you would have to tell him Messiah Fafi Tumay, and you would have to tell him and ask him in such a way that Messiah Fafi Tumay, and then the Shach explains that no, if you're... if you're talking to a regular goy, then you're afraid he might lie, and therefore you need to ask him in a way where he's not going to realize the implication of what he's telling you. But when it comes to a chef, like we're saying over here, then it actually would be allowed, because like Tosfos says, he's an uman, he's an expert, he has a professional reputation to uphold, and he's not going to want to ruin it. Now that's according to the Mechaber. The Ramah B'chlal disagrees and says that you can't rely on the tasting of a goy at all, even Messiah Chavit Tumay, even if he's a professional. So in practice, Ashkenazim learn that way, and the Kafa Chaim points out that Sfaradim nowadays have also accepted that Chumrah as well. So in that connection, the Shach actually points out that if it's something that's mutter to some types of Jews, let's say to Kohenim, then indeed you could have a Jew taste it, we will trust it. But when it comes to trusting the word of a goy on matters of Issa v'Heter, then I'm always saying we don't do that. On top of that, you also have from Rashi over here, it implies that you have to have bitul b'shishim, and you also have to then have the goy tasted. According to most Rishonim, it's not like that. The taste test will serve instead of bitul. If we rely on the taste test, then that will serve instead of bitul b'shishim, and it's good enough if we see that he doesn't detect it. So in that third case, then Rabbi Yochanan is saying that you have to have somebody taste it and see if he can detect the taste. So Omar Rava, so Rava points out in this connection, Meiresh Habakkashuli. Before I heard this psak din of Rabbi Yochanan, then I had a difficulty on the matter. I had the question as follows: Hodatanya, we learn in a brisa, Kedera Shabisha Wabasser, a pot that you cook meat in it, Lo Yavasha Bacholav, you're not allowed to cook milk in it. Because it absorbed milk. The Ian Bishol, but if he did cook in it, the Noisin Tam, then these go according to Noisin Tam. We see if the milk food that was cooked in there tastes of meat, then it'll be also, and if not, then not. Similarly, the Brisa continues, Truma, if you use the pot to cook truma, lo yivasha b'cholin, then you can't afterwards cook cholin in it for the same reason, because now the cholin is going to absorb flavor from the truma, and it'll be also for Yisrael to eat. The imbishel, the nois and tam, and again, if he cooked it, then nois and tam, then you check whether the cholin food has the taste of the previously cooked truma food in there. So Rava is saying, before I heard this din of Rabbi Yochanan about having a goyish chef tasting it, I was wondering, how do you figure out the nois and tam? When it comes to truma, easy enough. You have a koyim, taste it, and see if he can tell. So now we obviously have to be talking about min b'shein and mina. We're talking about obviously two different types of food. So let's say, for example, you previously cooked. So you previously cooked one kind of food in this pot of truma, and then now you cooked a different kind of food of chulin in there. So fine, you can have a koyim taste the new tavshil and see if he detects in it some of the original flavor of the previously cooked truma food. So fine, that'll work. Ella, but Rava wondered if Bosa B'cholot Mantayma, when it comes to the first case of the Braisa, where you have a pot that was used for Fleishik and now you cooked in it Milchik, and you're telling me Benois in town, Mantayma, who's supposed to taste it? Ashka, the Amr of Yechanan, some Chinanak, Fila Arma, but now that Rav Yechanan said we can rely on a Goyish chef, but now, And now Rava says, I understand. Good. That's exactly what we do in this case as well, is we rely on a Gerusha chef. We ask him to taste it, and we see whether he can detect the flavor of the meat in the milk or vice versa. Now again, according to Rashi, the point would be that you would have to give it to him in a way of Messiah Chavitumai. You can't tell him that this is a matter of Isur Veheter. Just tell him, I'm curious what this tastes like to you, or something like that. According to Tosfos, if it's a chef, if it's a professional, then you could even give him and tell him that I want you to use your professional expertise to tell me if this has the taste. And again, Uman Leimara, Uman Nusse, he's not going to risk his professional reputation by saying otherwise. And again, as the Ramah says, we don't really rely on that. We always say whether there's shishim, we always look whether there's shishim or not. This kind of thing of Uman Leimara Uman Nusse comes up in other areas of halacha as well. It's actually a good part of the kashrus industry to a large extent depends on that. Where you have, for example, you're going to be a kashrus agency is going to give a hechsher to a certain product, and they have to check with the manufacturers what ingredients exactly go in there and how their product lines work and all of that. To some extent, you're relying on what they say in terms of what ingredients and what methods and everything are used. I mean, you have to check it for yourself, obviously, but to some extent, you're relying on what they're saying because of this idea. Uman Leimara Uman Nusse, that they're professionals and they don't want to risk their professional reputation, especially, of course, also in countries like the United States where you have a USDA and other agencies like that, where if you don't have exactly what you say in there, then you're going to get in trouble with the government as well. So there is this idea of, to a certain extent, relying on what they say. So, talking more about this matter of vitul, when we say that something osur is botul and something heter. So now the Gemara continues on this topic. We're going to draw distinctions between different types of mixtures. There's a difference whether they're the same min or whether they're different minim. There's also a difference of whether the issur is actually completely dissolved into the heter, or whether it just gave a flavor into it. And you have a difference of yavish for yavish versus lach for lach. You have a difference of dry things that are mixed together where each one still maintains its identity and you just don't know which one is which, versus lach for lach, liquid and liquid. Or also the post can point out that, for example, let's say mixtures of things like flour would also in effect be considered lach for lach because they thoroughly mix, where then you have a thorough mixture of there of them. So there's a lot of different distinctions like that drive many different dinim of Isser Veheter, many different dinim of Tarovus. So now Rava is going to start by giving us a summary of the relevant dinim in that regard. So the Omar Rava, so Rava says, or on the side of it here it says it should be Omar Rava, that's really a new statement, a new piece of Gemara. So Rava says, Omar Rabbanan Bataima, sometimes there are times when the Chachamim tell us it depends on the taste. Where we say Benoisim Tam, like we just said, for example, a number of the cases that we just had. For example, this case of the kilchis, the ilpas, of this non-kosher fish that was cooked in a pot of meat together with kosher meat, where we said we go according to the tam. Or for example, we just had the braisa now about a fleshic pot in which he cooked milk, or a truma pot in which he cooked cholin. So sometimes omer rabbanan b'taima, and sometimes the chachamim tell us you go according to the tam, you have somebody taste it. But omer rabbanan b'tefila, sometimes the chachamim tell us specifically that. So in other words, sometimes the chachamim will tell us, but nois and tam, you don't have to have a goy taste it. Sometimes you have the tefila where you have a goyish chef taste it. But omer rabbanan b'shishin, and then there are times when the chachamim tell us that you need bittul b'shishin. So what are the rules? When do we apply one versus when do we apply the other? Rava says the difference is as follows. And by the way, as far as the 60, so we'll learn tomorrow, Baruch Hashem, where the Chachamim got the figure 60 from in the first place, but many Rishonim point out that Midaraisa, things would actually be bottled with Ruiv. So the whole concept, so many times, the whole concept that you need shishim is actually many times only dirabon. And you have also those distinctions in that. Again, and you're talking about the actual mamoshus of the isser is in there, the actual substance of the isser. Like, say, for example, a piece of cheese fell into a pot of meat and actually got, and then melted over there, and then you have the actual substance of the cheese in there versus when you have flavor and so on and so forth. Anyway, so Rava says, so here's the general rules. Hilkach, so therefore as follows, min b'she'en and min d'hetera, when you have two different things of two different types, and each one has a different flavor, d'hetera, and both of them were mutter, so therefore you're able to have a yid, therefore you're able to have a yid taste it. So for example, like we said, truma and cholin, so then v'taima, then we go according to the flavor. And then, so in the case of truma and cholin, for example, so we'll give it to a kohen to taste and see if he can detect the taste of the truma food. Truma itself, usually we say is a bottle only in 100. So what do you mean that here 60 is enough? So the Rashba and the Ran point out that would be min b'minoi. That would be when you're talking about truma gets mixed in with the same kind of substance, then you need a hundred times as much to be bottled. You have many Mishnayas in Masechta Truma, for example, that deal with dinim about, say, for example, a saw of wheat fell into many other si'im of wheat. So you need 100 times as much to be bottled because it's all wheat. Here we're talking about min b'shenim, you know, Then it would be different, and it would be enough to be 60. Another way of looking at it, the Rashba also brings from Tosfos that because here we're only talking about a pot that was cooked, that was used for truma and then for cholin, so therefore, so to say that you should need 100 times as much as the pot absorbed, we're not going to be machmir like that. Rashi further on explains yet another distinction that even min b'shein and minah, you may sometimes need 100 where the truma is the ain, where you can actually where it's yavish for yavish, or where the actual item of truma is still there intact, and just you can't recognize which it is, then you're going to need 100. So you have several different opinions among Rishonim when you need 100 versus when you need 60 with Truma. In any case, so Rava is saying there's a case with Truma where you don't need 60 and you don't need a Goyish Hashef. It's Truma and Cholin, very well. A Yisrael can't taste it, but a Koyan can. Have a Koyan taste it and then tell you what he detects in it. And that, as the Shach points out, that will be allowed even according to what the Ramah is saying, that we don't rely on a Goy Sheshef, but here we're not talking about a Goy, we're talking about a Yid, and therefore you can trust him. So then we go according to the flavor. On the side of it here, there's a Girsa that a number, that the Rif and a number of other Rishonim have, that adds more details over here, that where it's min b'she'en min d'hetera. And then the ikal and make him a time that you're able to detect the flavor because they're different things. You're going to data shabishabal truma, the chazer of bishabal cholin. For example, like you said before, pot was used to cook truma, and then you use it to cook cholin, midavashain and minay, and it's two different types. Misharin and the timer, then we evaluate according to the flavor. Next, the isura, when you have what's mixed in with something that was osur, and it's on, and it's min b'she'en eminoi, so for example, bosa b'cholov, or other examples like that, chaylev with meat, and different other possibilities like that, so then you can't have a gib taste it, so then the kfila, then you have a goyish chef taste it, either masiach of itomoy according to Rashi, or a professional who won't risk his reputation according to Tosfos. And, then what about if it's min b'minoi? What if both of them are the same type of food, whether heter or iser, and there's no way to tell because there's no difference in flavor? So then delekta l'meka matayma, and there's no way of being able to detect the flavor. The Rif and the Ran have a girsa over here. For example, the fat of the gidan nasha, which is not necessarily going to be detectable because it's embedded in the rest of the meat. Inami min b'she'en minay di isura delaka kvela, or even if it's min b'she'en minay and there's an isur, but let's say there's no goyish chef around that you can ask. So then Rava says b'shishim, then we're going to go b'shishim, and then we're going to say if you have 60 times as much as the isur, then it will be bottled. So those are the cases. So those are the different cases where you have the different figures over here. Tosfos at the on the previous Amud has a long discussion about on top of that also there is an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda the Tana who holds min b'mino lo batal that you never, whenever you have two things of the same min mixed together then they're not batal. We learned about it in the Zvachim, for example, that he holds that blood of one korban is not mevatal blood of the other, and he said even for example blood of a korban gets mixed in with blood of chulin then it's not going to be batal. So and then Tosfos points out that in the next parak, when we continue talking about these dinim of Taruva, Sadash and Paskins, over there, like Rabbi Yehuda, min b'min alei batal, and therefore that would mean that, and if so, then when the Gemara is saying over here that min b'mino, you would have to go according to the Shishim, that would only be according to the Chachamim, not according to the Yehuda, and according to Rashi, that would actually not be the Halacha. Rabbi Tam says that no, the halacha is not like all of that. The halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan against Sudav, and Rabbi Yochanan had said over here that you can rely on a goy, and Rava is saying over here that you can rely on 60, and Tosfos has a considerable discussion about when we would apply one versus the other. Nevertheless, Tosfos points out when it comes to chometz on Pesach, then not necessarily are you going to be so meichel because chometz for Pesach is a more serious issur. It's osur b'mashahu, and the rest of the year you're not careful to stay away from chometz, so therefore you need to be machmer. So you have quite a bit of complication about that. In this regard, by the way, you know, you have the halachas of tarubas, these halachas of mixtures of basar b'chalav or kosher and non-kosher, most of them are in Yoredeya, but there are also sections in Orach Chaim and the halachas of Pesach that deal with it. In the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, we don't have most of Yoredeya, most of it is missing, but we do have most of Hilchos Pesach, and there he has, in fact, a considerable amount of discussion about many of these dinim of Hilchos Tarubas. So that, in other words, if not enough to just learn the relevant simonim in Yoredeya, you also have to look and see what there is in that regard. In Orach Chaim, we're there to some extent. We say the chumras over there are because of Pesach, but nevertheless, there are principles that you can deduce from there for year round as well. The Gemara goes on, getting back to this matter of the Gidan Nosha and the Thai. The Gemara says, Hanu Atma Hossa, the Imlichu Beresh Golosa, the Gidan Nashra. It happened once that there were thighs of animals that had been salted, the salting to remove the blood, in the household of the Beresh Golosa with the Gidan Nosha inside, and nobody had removed the Gidan Nosha. So what do we do? Ravina Osar. So Ravina said they're all Osar because again they absorbed from the fat around the Gidan Osha. Rav Acha bar Rav Ashi, or how goes Sabach takes out the word Ashi. And therefore it's just Rav Acha bar Rav, and there will be shown in one of the gears of Rav Acha brei de Rav or whatever. Anyway, so Rav Acha said that it's mutter. Now, you know, clearly you're not allowed to do that, but b'di'evad he said it would be mutter. Now, so again, there will be shonim hulu, and the problem is that you have the fat over there, and therefore the problem is, like Tosfos had mentioned before, maliach harei kareseach, when you have something that's heavily salted, it's considered in effect as though it's cooked, as though it's boiling, and therefore will have absorbed from that fat, and therefore it would be also, the Rabbi Shonim will point out that the problem would be because of the fat, but again, we did talk about before, the fat is only also Dirabbanan, so maybe it shouldn't have caused such a problem. And then there's also another way of looking at it is that if the fat is not going to be more osur than the gidanosha, and if we say ain begidden benosim tam, if we say which is la halacha that the gidanosha itself is not considered to have a detectable flavor that will osur the rest of the meat, then not necessarily is the issue going to be with the fat. So it would be Ravina would hold yesh begidden benosim tam and therefore become osur, whereas over here we're talking about according to Ravina would hold yesh begidden benosim tam, but the halacha would be ain begidden benosim tam. So you have the machlokas of these two amiroyim, whether it's also or not. So the Gemara says, also shailu l'ma'ab Rav Ashi. So they came to ask, ma'ab Rav Ashi, omru Abba Shori tells them, my father, Rav Ashi, said that in a case like that, it's mutter. So now we're omelet of Achaba, Rav Ravina. So the Achaba Rav asks Ravina, what were you thinking in the first place to say that it's also my daitek? Are you going to say it's because of what Shmuel says that when something is heavily salted, then it's considered in terms of transfer of taste as though it's boiling hot. And here we're talking about it was salted in order to remove the blood. So now Rashi later on, later in the next paragraph, talks about that the maliyah we're talking about is not necessarily the amount of salting we're talking about for kashering, just the amount that you would use, for example, to preserve meat for longer terms. And so, you know, nowadays you put it in the fridge, but back then you'd have to salt it heavily in order to keep it for a long time. And so Rashi says it's that amount of salting. Tosfos brings it over there from Abin Yaakov that it says it's the amount of the amount of salting that you would do specifically if you want to make like beef jerky for a long trip. And then a third explanation is the amount of salting that you do for kashering the meat, which is what we're talking about over here. Okay, in any case, so Rav Acha bar Rav says to Ravina, so what were you thinking to say that it's osur? Because Shmuel says maliyah hareyu kereseach, when something is salted, however we define that salting, then it's considered as though it was boiling, and therefore taste will transfer from one part to another, and kovo shareo kumuvoshal, and when you have something pickled in liquid, then it's the equivalent of it being cooked. Kovosh over here, Rashi explains, means, for example, it was in vinegar with spices and things like that, where Isu and Heter were soaked together, were pickled together in that. The post can point out another example of kovosh would be when you have something that's in water for 24 hours, and that's already enough for it to be considered kovosh when it comes to vinegar or other sharp liquids like that. And it's enough 18 minutes, but when it comes to blander liquids like water, you'd need 24 hours. In any case, so you're going to tell me, says Rav Acha to Ravina, that because of this maliyah hareyu kereseach, therefore you held that the thigh is considered as though it was cooked or roasted with the Gid HaNasha, but even so, so what? Didn't Shmuel say at the beginning of the Sugya, that the issue of our Mishnah to say that the whole thigh becomes also is only if the Gid HaNasha was cooked in it, but if it was roasted in it, then he said, then he can peel off layer by layer and eat until he reaches the Gid HaNasha, or as we said at the beginning of the Sugya, until he reaches the area around the Gid HaNasha, not necessarily is he able to eat all the way to the Gid, but at least close to it. So why are you telling me that the whole thigh should be osu? Now you're going to answer that maybe when Shmuel says that the maliyah hareyu kereseach, maybe you're thinking, Ravina, that it means like that it's like reseach of mevushal. It has the din of something that was heated up, like in cooking. And as the Mishnah had said, when it was cooked, then the whole thing would indeed be osu. And therefore, you're going to argue on that basis that the whole thing should in fact be, sir. And again, we're talking about that there was no shishim. So either some Rishonim learn that the case would be where the thigh as a whole was not 60 times as much as the Gid HaNasha. Otherwise, there certainly wouldn't be a problem even according to that. So even if you count the whole Gid HaNasha and the fact around it, you would have. So if we had 60 times as much in that of the meat of the thigh, then it would be mutter. On the other hand, that's according to the Ramban and the Rashba and the Ran. On the other hand, the Ra'ah and the Ritva say that no, even if you have the fat in there, then like we learned on Amar Avot, Shuman Mefapea, that the fat spreads out and penetrates through everything, and therefore, and they talk about it's not even a matter of, you can't even say that it spreads out evenly throughout the whole thing. That all points out, especially what might happen is, you might have that you have some areas that have a greater concentration of it than others, and there it's not going to be bottled. So therefore, so Rav Acha says to Ravina, are you thinking that way? Are you thinking that when we say kovel shai, when we're saying maliyah hareyu kereseach, that means it's as though it's cooked together, and you have an unequal spreading out of the flavor of the shuman throughout the whole thing? But no, since the continuation statement is that when something was pickled or was soaked in liquid, then it's considered as though it was cooked. So therefore, that means that they were adopted talking about cooked. Miklal, there they say after 3, therefore we can see the first part when it says maliyah hareyu kereseach, it doesn't mean like heated up as cooked. We mean heated as in roasting. So in other words, the power of taste transfer, Tarubis, when it comes to something salted is equal to that of roasting, not that of cooking. And since we said at the beginning of the sugya that when the fire was cooked with the gidan nosha, then the whole thing was awesome. But when it was roasted, then only the gidan nosha and the outer and the layer around it is awesome. Well, then the same thing should be over here. In this case, the fire was salted; it wasn't cooked. So therefore, says Rav Acha Barav to Rabina. So what's your basis for saying that the whole thing should be awesome? So the Gemara says, "Kasha, yeah, okay, it is a kasha on Rabina why he would say that." Kashi is not tiyufta, though. It doesn't mean that Ravina has been shlugged up, but nevertheless, the halacha is not necessarily like him. Fine. So the Gemara continues. Now we said before we talked about 60. So what counts towards the 60? So the Gemara says, "Amar Abchanina, kshehin misharin." When we evaluate to see when you need 60 misharin beroitev, you use not just the solids of the thing, not just for example the meat, but you also consider the liquid. So you also consider the volume of the liquid. Over kifa, you also count the dregs, the stuff that falls to the bottom of the pot, which is like little shreds of meat and spices and things like that tend to collect at the bottom of the pot. So you can count those as well. Over hatichas and the pieces of meat that are mutter. Over kdera, and you can even use the pot itself towards the shishim. What we mean by the pot itself, we're going to explain in a second. So what does that mean? Ikadis, and now we're going to explain. Ikadami b'kadeira atzma. Some say that it means that you actually count the volume of the walls of the pot itself. So in other words, you figure out this pot, for example, you have, let's say 10 ounces of material went into making this pot. So therefore, you would count 10 ounces towards the, so now you have 10 ounces to count towards being a vatel. Towards being the vatel of the issur. How do you do that exactly? We'll talk about. So according to Rashi, on the face of it, that's what it means. In other words, and then there are Rishonim who explain, the Rashba and other Rishonim explain that's exactly what it means. That literally we take the pot, we figure out the actual volume of the substance of the pot. Basically, we put it into a larger container and see how much the water level rises, which tells us the actual volume of the pot itself. And therefore, so we're saying that the actual walls of the pot itself will actually count. On the other hand, Tosfos and also the Ritva say that, wait a minute, so what are you going to tell me? So let's say, for example, so if you have a, Tosfos says, so what if you have, let's say, a pot whose total volume is 50 kazasim, then you put 10 kazasim of water in it, and then you put in a kazayas of chelev. You're going to tell me that it's going to be bottled? Why? The one kazayas of chelev is clearly going to be detectable in 10, the taste of it in 10 kazasim of milk. So no, Tosfos says that's not what it means. It doesn't mean you count the whole volume of the pot. What it means is, in other words, when you have, suppose that previously a kazayis of chelev had been cooked in this pot, where this pot had previously been used for heter as well, now you've mistakenly cooked heter in it as well, so now we will say that we can evaluate also, when we say to evaluate the pot, means to be mevatel the issur that was absorbed in it. In other words, we're going to say that we'll count the volume of the pot itself, the volume of the walls of the pot itself, together with what now it absorbed of heter, in order to be mevatel the issur. Then there's yet another explanation that some Rishonim have, that the Sharon B'Kedera means that you consider the contents of the pot right now. You don't take into consideration what the pot previously absorbed. So that's one version. The Ikadami, the Maide Bola Kedera, another opinion is that it means that we evaluate based on what the pot absorbed. So in other words, to say that you go according to what the pot absorbed would mean if we previously saw we saw something fall in there that's also, and then it shrank because some of it got absorbed. So now we're looking after it got cooked. So now suppose we don't find the heter is not 60 times as much. So we would say it's also, but we also have to take into consideration how much of it got absorbed by the walls of the pot. So then according to that version of it, we would not use the actual volume of the wall of the walls of the pot, but we would evaluate how much it can be considered to have absorbed. Now, Rashi points out that since we have two different Lashonis, and we're talking an Isser Daraisa over here, so we're going to have to go to Chumrah. We can't use the volume of the pot. We're going to have to look at how things are right now, as far as to evaluate how much Heter it absorbed. The fact is, it also absorbed Isser at the same time, so therefore not necessarily would that work. So there is a considerable amount of discussion about ins and about the ins and outs of that. What do we say? What is the actual din of when we can evaluate, when we can use the actual volume of the walls of the pot itself, and whether we have to consider only the volume that it absorbed? And this comes up also, for example, the other way around. You have a case in Shulchan Aruch, let's say, that you took a milchik spoon and put it into a fleshit pot, for example. You would have to consider the volume of the spoon as a whole and see, because you might have to, even though obviously not all of it is Isser, most of it is a metal or whatever material the spoon is made out of, but nevertheless, we may have to consider the total volume of it when we consider how much we need for bits, how much more we need for bits of a shishin. So this whole thing, as far as using the pot or using what the pot absorbed, is actually a little bit complicated. One thing is, according to Rashi is saying that you can't rely on using the pot at all. But it's not always like that. The fact is, sometimes we can indeed consider the volume of the pot. Said if it absorbed before and now it's exuding and absorbing again, then we can take that into consideration. So an interesting point is how large would the pot have to be, or how thin would it have to be for the content of it? Now what you have is like this: if the content of the pot itself, what if you have a pot itself that absorbed Isser and then you cooked Heter in it? So not that Isser fell into it, but rather just that you cooked Heter in an Isser pot. So then we say that Bittul B'Shishim will be enough. But and then we can say that we can figure out, well, what is the volume of the walls of the pot, and see if the volume of what the pot can contain is 60 times as much as that. So Shulchan Aruch points out that would be, for example, if you have a wide pot with very thin walls, then you could have that conceivably, that the volume of what it will hold will be 60 times or more than 60 times the volume of the walls. There's a Mefodosh Hagenah on the Rambam called the Teres HaMishnah, and that same author, Reb Shlomo of Chil, and his name was, also wrote a sefer called Breichus B'Cheshvan, where he goes into many different things of mathematics and Torah, and here he points out an interesting mathematical fact, and he shows and he illustrates it with many examples, that the most efficient way, if the pot's height is exactly the average of its length and width, so it doesn't matter whether it's a square pot or round, but if you have it, the height of it is exactly half of the length and half of the width, then that will be the maximum, then that will have the maximum interior volume compared to the volume of its walls. So in other words, if you want to have a pot, that if you want to find a case where a pot will be able to hold 60 times the volume of its walls, the most likely way you'd be able to do that would be if the pot's height is half of its length and width. And that can be calculated mathematically and shown to be so. Next, the Gemara says more about these matters of bittul isurim. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabba Bahu Amar Rabbi Yechman, Kol isurim shabat Torah, Mesharin and Ki'ilu hein botzul v'kathloi. Whenever we have all isurim in the Torah, except now Gid Anosha, we said in the Mishnah that you consider as though the Gid itself was meat, and the rest of the meat was like turnips, and you see whether this volume of Gid Anosha would be enough to give a flavor into the meat, just like you would see if the meat has enough of it to give a flavor into the turnips. Now, Rabbi Bo says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, when it comes to other isurim Shabbat Torah, instead of using meat versus turnips, we consider them as though they're onions or shallots. So we see, the shallots are also in the onion family. So you see whether the amount of Isser is enough to give a flavor into the Heter. You evaluate it, you consider if an equal amount of onion or shallot had fallen into the pot, would it give a flavor? And the idea would be, Tosfos explains, because the Gid Anosha, we said before that maybe even it doesn't even have much of a flavor at all. We said Ein Megidin Menosin Tam, or even if we say Yesh Megidin Menosin Tam, it's not really that much of a flavor, as opposed to other Yisurim have a very strong flavor over here, and say that, and therefore we would consider that we would have to consider them as though they were onions. Now it comes out, Tosfos says, and it comes out, Rabbi Yochanan, we disagreeing before, where Rava had said before that we broke the Shishim, and Rabbi Yochanan would be saying a different way of it. Now Tosfos says the halacha would have to be like Rava in that that we go the Shishim. So Rashi also points out. Rashi points out that we're talking about where you're not able to taste the iser. For example, min b'minoy, or even when there's no kfeila around. This was Rashi says this is before the halacha had been passed in the shishim. So in other words, according to Rashi, Rabbi Yochanan is talking about before the halacha had been established the shishim. Later on, we're also going to have examples of that where it was where some tanoim held that it's mutter even with less than 60. Whereas again, eventually the halacha was passed from like Rava earlier on Yomim that we go with shishim, and therefore that's how it is. So therefore, again, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we consider, we evaluate the issue to know whether it gave a flavor. We consider it as though it was onions. Omle Rav Abba l'Abaya, but Rav Abba asks Abaya, why dakta like onions? Well, asharun and kilpul and betablin, dakta l'elef l'betablin. Why not evaluate them as though they were pepper or other kinds of spices, and the taste of those is not bottle in even 1,000? So maybe you should say, if a small amount of heck of issue falls into heather, then you could say, imagine as though that issue was pepper, and therefore even a tiny amount of it will still give a flavor. Amalei Sabai says because shiur of chachamim the innos from the town the isurim yotzim the bottle of kafloid, because the chachamim figured out that when it comes to isurim, there's no greater noisin tam, there's nothing that gives a greater flavor more than onions or shallots, and therefore the chachamim figured out like that. In other words, obviously, yes, spices obviously have more of a flavor for them. So then, yes, if you have spices themselves that are also, for example, from Orla, then yeah, we're going to say that you go even be'elef, but other kinds of Isurim, we're not going to be so machmer. We're just going to consider it like onions. Next. Amar Rav Nachman, gid b'shishin. When it comes to being mevatel, gid anosha, then it's botel b'shishin. Now, what we mean is now if the gid itself is noticeable, then as we said in the mission, you have to take it out. And if it's not noticeable, if it got melted in, then it's not melted in. If it's not noticeable, but it's still there, the ain, and you just can't recognize it, then as we learned before, it's a barrier, and a barrier is not bottle. So what we're talking about over here, that Ramban and the Rashi will point out, we're talking about over here the flavor of it. So let's say, for example, so it got dissolved into the pot, or it got cut up or whatever, and now it can be bottle b'shishim. So then, gid b'shishim, the ain gid ben aminyan. However, the gid itself does not count towards that 60, meaning you're going to have 60 gidim of heter to counteract the one gid of isur. Does that apply also to the does that apply to the gid anosha itself? Does it also apply to what about the shuman? So that you have different rishonim argue about that. Are we talking specifically about the gid anosha, or are we talking about the gid anosha with its shuman? Anyway, so it can be bottle of shishin, but the gid itself, you're going to need 60 times as much heter as the actual issur itself. On the other hand, continues Rav Nachman, chal, on the other hand, when it comes to the udder of an animal, now the udder we're going to learn about in more detail in the next parak, the udder is after all where the milk is produced in a female animal. So now you have the issue, how do you eat an udder without violating the issue of bosa b'chala? So we're going to talk about in the next parak what you have to do in order to extract as much of the milk as possible, but nevertheless you still have, so you have cases where you have cases where you didn't do that, you have cases where you did do that, but nevertheless you still can't cook it. Maybe you don't have to roast it. We're going to talk about it in more detail in the next paragraph, various dinim about that. But anyway, so when you have a case of chal of an udder, which is also, so then the shishim, you also need shishim, chal atzma or chal min aminyan, but the chal itself will count as one of the 60, meaning you only need 59 things of heter for it. Why is that? One point is because the chal itself intrinsically is mutter, it's meat after all, it's only the issue is only because of the milk that's embedded in it, so therefore so you don't need to be mevatel the chal itself. You also have that after all the cooking causes the milk to come and to exude and then to spread out and everything over there, so therefore then it affects the chal equally as the rest of the meat. Another point is also only did Rabbanan, and then you have a variety of different points that the Rishonim and Achronim point out of why the Tzal will be more lenient. Then Rabbi Nachman says another din. Beitza, suppose you have a non-kosher egg. So for example, Rashi says, let's say we're talking about an egg of a non-kosher bird, b'shishim, and if it's mixed with other ones, also b'shishim, then you also need 60. The ain beitzim and aminyan, that one that's foster is not going to be one of it. You have to have 60 eggs of heter. And Tosfos points out the same thing would be as far as other Isurim as well. Most other Isurim, we would say that you need to have 60 of Heter, and the Isur itself doesn't count yet. Only by the Chal, only by the Utter, are we saying that we can count it as one of the 60. So here we're talking about as far as, and Rashi explains, we're talking about an egg, of a non-kosher bird, but actually we're going to talk later on that there can be other ways in which an egg is also as well. And there you're going to have different considerations. What we're talking about over here, what kind of egg we're talking about. In the end, the Gemara is going to say we're talking about an egg that has a chip in it, where therefore it's also because of the chip. We're not talking about it came from a non-kosher bird. So the Gemara says, Amar Abashi, the Gemara says, Amar Abitzchak, Breda Meshashia, or Chal Atzmai Osir. Now, suppose you have this case of udder that got mixed in with other meat. So we're saying it can be bottle of shishim, but nevertheless, the chal itself will remain osur because it still absorbs milk that exudes from it. Again, if you didn't take out the milk properly, as we're going to learn in the next parak, so the meat gave a flavor to the milk. And on the other hand, the milk didn't give much of a flavor to the meat. But the point is, you do have a mixture over there, which is bosa b'chalav, and therefore it's going, and therefore the chal itself is going to be osir. So what does that mean? It means that now if that chal were to fall into another pot which doesn't have shishim osir, then it would osir all of it. Tosfos brings up the point that if the whole thing is osir, then it's called chatif and nasif nevela, then why are we saying that it's enough to have 59 things of heter and it itself can count as the 60? If the whole thing becomes osir, then it should be like nevela or like any other isir, and you need 60. So Tosfos says because it actually has hollows inside it. And then you have, in those hollows, milk collects over there, and that milk now has a flavor of meat, and really, once it's cooked, you can't really separate them, so therefore, we're going to say the chal itself, the meat of the chal, can count as one of the 60. But on the other hand, we're still going to say that if it falls into something else and you don't have shishim, then it's going to be osur. And Tosfos points out that eventually the milk does spread into all the pieces of the meat, but at the beginning, first that milk becomes osur because of the taste of the meat in it, and therefore, so even afterwards. We have a point which we're going to learn later on. We're going to have a point later on called Efshel Soichta. Conceivably, when we talk about an Isser, when we talk about something of Heter that absorbed substance or flavor of Isser, conceivably, could you squeeze it all out and then say hypothetically it could become Mutter? So you have different opinions about that later in the Gemara. Whether that kind of thing we're going to have in the next Perek, whether that kind of thing is still Osir. Or whether it's mutter, and Tosfos points out how that would reply as far as the order over here. So therefore the chal itself remains also. However, the kula we have is that you only need 59 things of heter to be mevatel and not 60. So the Gemara says, Amar Ravashi, Ki Aven in Be'er Rav Kahana. So Ravashi says, when we were Talmidim in the Yeshiva of Rav Kahana, he boil on. So we had a question about that. He Misharinen, when we evaluate the 60 times the Kral, the Didei Misharinen, are we evaluating looking at the whole Kral, at the entire other? Or do we only look at the amount of milk that exudes out of it during the cooking? So in other words, after all, the chal itself is meat, and it itself should be mutter. But the question is basically whether we have to consider the whole thing absorbed milk, and therefore should be osur. And we figured out, says Ravashi, pshita to be de misharin, and obviously we mean you need 60 times as much as the entire chal. Because if you're going to say you have to evaluate how much comes out of it, how much would we know? How much milk comes out of it? So I'm going to ask Elamayata, well, if you're telling me that the whole chal needs to be considered also, not for lo yeser, And we should say, if it does fall into another pot and there's no shushim, why should it ask through everything? The milk in it, after all, should have been bottled in the original pot that it was in. So, well, yes, so it shouldn't ask it. Now the new pot that it falls into. In other words, we should consider, Tosfos says, we should consider that all the milk, so why would we, in other words, if you say that you consider only the milk, then you would say, okay, listen, not necessarily are we sure that all the milk came out. But if you consider the entire volume of the cow, then in effect, you're saying that all the milk in it came out from where it was, and it all became bottled, so why should now it ask for the second mixture? Marshall asks on Tosfos, and then that it doesn't seem to be if there's always a suffix whether all the milk came out. But if we then there's a suffix. If we figure out the whole volume of the cow, then nevertheless, obviously you have the entire volume is clearly not milk. So what's Tosfos's question? That all gives a different explanation. The whole issue of a cow when it was cooked with the milk is only dirabanan because midaraisa milk from a shchuta is not osir. So therefore, so the question is, if it's only dirabanan, then why are we not made like that? Then Tosfos also points out another way of understanding the question would be that we're saying that Reb Nachman had said that the chal itself counts as one of the 60, so we don't consider it to be completely osir. It's only osir because of the milk. So then why should it osir? So why should it osir another part if there's not 60 times as much as it? And the answer is Kivin de Omer Reb Yitzchok Greider Masharsha chal atzmei osir, because since Reb Yitzchok Greider Masharsha had just said chal itself becomes osir. Even after it was mixed with the 59, it's still also because to begin with it absorbed milk, shavir rabban, kachaticha the nevela, then therefore the chacham will consider it like a piece of nevela, and therefore it's going to ask for another pot if you don't have 60 in it. So in other words, for the chal itself to be bottled, you only need 59 of heter, but for it to be bottled now in another pot, then you're going to need 60 of heter in the other pot, and the chal itself is going to count as the equivalent of a piece of nevela that fell in there, and therefore it's not going to be bottled. Okay, so we'll continue.